Welcome to today's talk, which is entitled Dying Professionally, It Matters How You Act. Before we start, because this is a Mahayana teaching, we're going to start with our motivation, which we do with all Mahayana practices, which is, may whatever we're going to do today be for the benefit of all sentient beings. So that's our motivation. The title Dying Professionally, if we start with the dying part, or death, of course, death is something that we all know that's going to come. And if you go downtown or on the street and ask people, are you going to die? They'll say, well, of course I'm going to die. You know, death and taxes, the two things that are inevitable. But if you look at how people lead their lives, they don't always lead their lives as if they are aware that death not only is inevitable, but the time of it is uncertain. So when you're young, you think, oh, I'm young, you know, I've got my whole life ahead of me, which of course may or may not be true. And when you get older, you think, yeah, but I have all these things to do. I can't die now. I've still got to do my taxes and buy groceries and wash my car. And so people don't necessarily have it in the forefront of their consciousness, of our consciousness. But a good Buddhist should actually think or even meditate about death every single day, because that actually improves the quality of your life, because it puts things in perspective and it also stops you from doing some things that maybe you might do otherwise, which are unskillful. It really is actually a good thing to be aware of and to use to your advantage in living. That's the first word. As far as professionally, dying professionally, what do we mean when we say that? Well, the example I use for that is, in my kitchen, in my home, I have a leaky faucet. And when it leaks, I just reach with my hand and tighten the gasket, the washer, and for 6 months, it's fine. So I don't have to be a plumber to do that. But if I wanted to replace the whole sink, something like that, I would call a professional plumber. There's no way that I could do that myself. A lot of people approach death and dying as if it were just a leaky faucet that they can just kind of, oh, well, I'll wing it when I get there, or something like that. Actually, dying and what happens after we die is a very important turning point in our existence, and it's really, really important to know how to manage it and then manage it. Why do we say that it's an important turning point? There's a number of reasons, but the main reason is that how you die and the intermediate state between this life and the next life are very important in determining your next rebirth, because it's a critical moment. How you manage it has a large influence of where you end up in your next life. Of course, we all want to have a good next life. So knowing how to manage this transition is part of what we call skillful means. It's being skillful. That's kind of what we mean by dying professionally. And it matters how you act is just this. It's just that it does make a difference how you manage it in determining your rebirth and the quality of it. When the Buddha walked on the earth 2,600 years ago, he taught for about 45 years. If you think about it, that's a long time, and there are lots and lots of teachings. And fortunately, they have survived, and there are living masters who can help us interpret and live these teachings out. But if you were to ask somebody, well, what did the Buddha teach in those 45 years? Just tell me briefly, you know, I'm busy, I don't have time, give it to me in the short version. It could be summarized in three phrases. One is, don't do harm. Another is, if you can, do good. And then the third one might be train your mind. This teaching that we're going to cover today and talk about today is in the third category of what we call mind training. These are pithy instructions that have come down over the centuries through various lineages, and the commentaries have still survived. This particular mind training is called the Five Powers for Dying. Sometimes it's translated as the Five Strengths for Dying. And different teachers over the years have made different commentaries on these five powers. Because they are pithy, they really need to be kind of fleshed out or unpacked, as they say, for us to really understand them more clearly. And so the commentary that I'm going to refer to today was the commentary that was written by Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, who was one of the great saints of the 20th century. He was born in 1910 and he passed away in 1991. Just a really great, great teacher. So when I say Rinpoche says this or that, I'm referring to Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche. And he has a really, really interesting biography that's available both in book form and in video called Brilliant Moon. So that's something that you might want to look at because it's really interesting and he's an amazing, great teacher. The five powers for dying, in order to teach that teaching, there is a preamble that is taught, and that is the five powers for living. Of course, if you're going to die well, it helps to have lived well. If you live badly, then dying well becomes more of a challenge. What Rinpoche has done is he has given us first the five powers for living. The first power for living is called the power of resolution. The power of resolution, what are we resolving? We're resolving, while we're living, to not abandon bodhicitta. The question then is, well, what is bodhicitta? Bodhicitta is a Sanskrit word, and one of the reasons that it has been translated, but it's not an easy word to translate. Sometimes it's translated as enlightenment mind, or I think it's better to put it mind of enlightenment. But even that doesn't really fully describe what it means. We need to go into that in a little more detail here, at least to have some idea what we're talking about. It's a big topic, but just to kind of touch on it for today's discussion, bodhicitta, or mind of enlightenment, can be divided into two types. Relative bodhicitta and absolute bodhicitta. Absolute bodhicitta refers to the wisdom realizing the true nature of reality. So this has to do with the emptiness teachings and interdependent origination and so on. It's a large, deep topic. This is one of the things that a spiritual practitioner needs to realize in order to attain enlightenment. The realization of this is, the total realization is something that only a fully enlightened Buddha has, but that's our aspiration. The relative bodhicitta is also divided into two types. And traditionally it's been translated as wishing and entering. I personally prefer the word aspiring instead of wishing. And that's just my personal preference. You'll see it translated different ways. Wishing to me kind of has this idea, oh, well, I wish I would win the lottery, or I wish for world peace, or I wish... It's kind of wishful thinking. Whereas aspiration is more determined. I'm going to do this, and I set this as a goal, and I'm going to plant the seed, and then I'm going to act on it. So it has more backbone to it. So that's why I prefer the word aspiration or aspiring. In any case, the example that's traditionally given in the teaching is, say I want to drive from here to Toronto. I'm maybe going to get a map or go online and see what the route would be and so on, and I'm aspiring to do it. I haven't done it yet. I haven't even started the journey yet, but I'm kind of seriously making plans, and I intend definitely to do it. But before I do it, I have to know, well, what's the road to take, and how long is it going to take to get there, and so on. I sort of have to plan it, but I am definitely going. The entering is when I get in my car and drive there. I act it out, I actualize it, I actually do it. So it's kind of like two sides of the same coin in a way. What is it that we aspire to when we have wishing bodhicitta? Well, we aspire to attain enlightenment for the sake of all beings. Why? Because if rebirths are infinite and the number of sentient beings is infinite, that means at some point all beings at one point or another have been my mother, have been kind, have given birth to me, given me life, taken care of me in some way or another. And so, because they are suffering in samsara, in cyclic existence, I can't stand that, and I want to help them, but I don't have any power now. The only way to have that power, the only person who has that power, is a fully enlightened Buddha. They have that power. They have the power by teaching the path. That's the power that they have. So I'm going to accomplish enlightenment or Buddhahood in order to be able to help all my sentient mothers. So that's the motivation. That's the aspiration part. What is the entering part? How do I do that? For a Mahayana Buddhist, which this is a Mahayana teaching, a great vehicle teaching, that's what Mahayana means, great vehicle. The way to do that, or the path, is the six perfections. That is the actual path. That's what I need to do. That's the getting in the car and driving part. How do I actualize it? So the six perfections being generosity, morality, patience, joyous enthusiasm, meditation, and wisdom. So those are the six perfections that I need to actualize as the path to enlightenment, to be able to help all sentient beings, all my mothers. When we say the power of resolution, and we say, I will not abandon bodhicitta, I will keep that in mind, I will actualize it, I will make that my practice. That's my spiritual practice, is the actualization of it, and I will never abandon it. I will never give it up. I will never let it go. I will never forget it. That is the first power for living that we need to realize, is the power of resolution to not abandon bodhicitta. The second power is called familiarization. Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche says, and I quote here, I'm quoting from his teaching, in the beginning meditation is difficult, but it becomes easier if we persevere at it. There is nothing that one cannot get used to. Of the six perfections, he's pulling out the fifth one, which is meditation, and he's using that as an example. But actually, that applies to all six of the perfections. How do we actually do that? How do we do the familiarization? Like, what are the nuts and bolts, the mechanics of it? Traditionally, it's said that there are three steps in this process. So the first step is listening to the teaching. Or in some cases, it might be reading. But in any case, both fall under the first step. So in other words, we need to get the information and get the teaching and have it be given to us. We need to receive it in some way or another from a teacher or maybe from a book. The second step is what's called contemplation. So what does that mean? That means we need to really think about it. And not only that, but clarify questions and doubts and really get it crystal clear in our minds what the teaching actually is and what the teaching isn't. So really go through this process of clarification, asking questions, thinking about it, pondering it, contemplating, thinking. It's a mental cognitive activity that we do. Then, once we have it really clarified exactly what it is and what it isn't, then we meditate on it. We focus on it. Meditation here means one pointed concentration on a wholesome object. In this case, the wholesome object is the subject of the teaching that we've received. Meditating on it, we take it in deeper. It goes into our core. It becomes part of our belief system. Our understanding of it becomes much, much deeper. And the word meditation itself has understood in it. It's not always listed in the definition, but it's understood that meditation means becoming familiar with. So that's sort of understood, not necessarily explicitly stated. So this three-step process, ending up with the familiarization of meditation, is what we need to do in order to really understand and correctly practice the six perfections. If we don't really correctly understand them and know how to practice them, obviously we won't practice them correctly, and we won't be accomplishing the path at least as quickly and maybe not even at all. So it's really important that we get all this sort of lined up, so to speak, so that we can really actualize the bodhicitta that we are committed to not abandoning. And that's how we develop spiritually. That's familiarization. The next power is called the power of positive seeds. So what are the positive seeds? And according to Dogo Kenshi Rinpoche, this refers to the accumulation of merit. So then the question is, well, what is merit? Well, in this case, when we say merit, what we mean basically is positive spiritual energy, which is generated by our activities on the path of the six perfections. As we do spiritual practice, which is positive, this energy is accumulated, and this is part of the actualization of the path. We need to accumulate what's called the heap of merit, a lot of positive energy. We need to develop spiritually a lot, because enlightenment is a very advanced state, the most advanced state. We need to be constantly focused on positive thoughts, words, and deeds that generate the positive spiritual energy of merit. And that needs to be a daily practice of ours. And of the six perfections, the first five focus on the accumulation of merit. The sixth perfection, which is the accumulation of wisdom, only comes about by the accumulation of merit. So in order to accomplish the sixth perfection, which is what we want to do, we want to have the realization of wisdom, transcendental wisdom, we need to accumulate a lot of merit. The first five perfections are really focused on the sixth perfection as the goal, so to speak. So the positive seeds are, the reason we use the word seeds is when we accumulate merit, we're accumulating positive karma. And karma is kind of a complex topic. A lot of times people tend to think of it as, oh, that's my karma. It's something I did in the past, and now I'm living it out now. But we also accumulate future karma by what we're doing now. So what we think and say and do now accumulates karma, either positive or negative. And obviously we want to accumulate positive karma. We want to focus on what we're thinking, saying, and doing now so that we generate this accumulation of positive energy. And it's like a seed that then grows. It kind of reflects back to this idea of aspiration. Aspiration is also can be thought of as planting a seed. Before I drive to Toronto, I have to get the idea and get the map. And then I get in the car and drive. So I'm planting the seed by doing that. So aspiration is also kind of another way of looking at planting seeds. It's called the seed of karma, or sometimes it's called the root of karma, or the roots of merit. So we shouldn't just think that, well, you know, I gave a piece of food to a hungry animal and that's it. It's not it. It's not over. It then multiplies because that's the nature of karma. It has this multiplying effect. You can think of it as like hundredfold. If I do something good, the karmic result will be 100 times more than that. So it's really important that we understand this, that even a very small action, good or bad, and when I say action, I'm including thoughts and words, but it needs to be not diminished just because it's small, because the effects of a hundredfold multiplication are great. So that's why words like seed and root are used, because a little tiny apple seed is just a little tiny thing, but if it's planted correctly and nurtured correctly and grows into a big apple tree, you get a lot of apples. So we need to kind of think in these kinds of terms when we're talking about merit and karma and these topics. So that's why it's called positive seeds. We need to be constantly thinking about this idea and actualizing it in terms of our bodhicitta. Our entering bodhicitta is our daily life and what we do with it. Eliminate the negative, accentuate the positive. So the next power or seed is called the power of revulsion. What are we talking about here? Through this previous three-step process that we mentioned before of listening, contemplation, and meditation, if we're very careful and we go through that process and we really look at life and how life plays out, we will be able to eventually see that all the suffering that we have, all the afflictive emotions, all the bad stuff that we have to go through is the result of ego clinging, or what's sometimes called self-cherishing. That's the cause of every evil, every suffering. This, it might seem a little bit counterintuitive at first glance, because if you look at how we live our lives, we mostly think and act in regard to number one, ourselves. And then maybe our family, if we have a good relationship, our family, we might think about them and care about them. And then if we're really civic-minded, we might think about our city or wherever we live. And if we're patriotic, we might think about our country. But for most people, that's about as far as it goes. Oh, we might have the idea of world peace. That would be nice. But the idea of caring for and working for all sentient beings in all levels of existence, in all world systems, in all universes, and all animals, insects, spirits, you know, whatever. Unless we are a highly developed bodhisattva on the path, we probably don't think that way as part of our daily way of living. But in effect, the fact that we don't think about things that way and we don't act that way is what causes us to suffer. So self-cherishing is the cause of suffering. What's the cause of happiness, which we all want? That's altruism. In the ancient text, it said, if you look at the Buddhas, they're enlightened. They practiced altruism. If you look at us, we're not. We practice self-cherishing. Draw your own conclusion. Have a nice day. It takes some time to sort of make this shift from what we habitually and normally do, think, and be, to this other way, which is sometimes called exchanging self for others. That's kind of the title to this practice, which is a pretty extensive practice, but that's what's being talked about here. When we talk about revulsion, we're getting it, we're starting to get it, that self-cherishing is the problem. And we want to be moving away from that as quickly as possible so that we can finally put an end to suffering. And that's one of the aspects of the path that we need to actualize, is to change our way of being. So the next power, the fifth power, is the power of aspiration. Now, we've already talked about aspiration a little bit. According to this teaching, what are we aspiring for? According to Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, he says, whenever we have completed some positive action, some meritorious action, we should think this way. From now until enlightenment, I will never abandon the two kinds of bodhicitta. So we should think that way, and then we should really deeply think, any problems, any conflicts that I encounter along the way, I'm going to turn those into the path. And there are teachings about how to do that, how to take obstacles onto the path and problems onto the path. And then after we aspire in these two ways, some people use the word praying. I don't really like that word so much, but if you like that word, you can use it. We aspire, we, you know, think this way, this is what I want, to never abandon the two bodhicittas and take problems onto the path. Then after we've done that, we should make offerings to our teacher, to the Buddha Dharma Sangha, because that generates merit. And then we can just ask for their help, for their assistance. We do have that available to us. It's not like we're all alone and this whole thing is on our shoulders alone. We do have that available to us, but we have to ask for it. We have to be open to it and we have to receive it. So that's what we should do after we've done some good action. And we should do, in other words, we should do that all the time, every day. And then, of course, afterwards, we would want to dedicate that merit. According to Dilgo Khyentse Rinpoche, this is it. These are the five powers condensed in a really pithy kind of way. The meaning is really profound, and the mind training is very elaborate and very extensive and very deep, but if you want to really boil it down to 5 points, those are the five powers. Those are the five powers to live by in order to prepare ourselves for the five powers for dying, which is where we're headed in this discussion. So that's kind of the preliminary discussion about this topic, about starting today, starting right now in this moment. You can start right now in this moment. You can start to actualize the five powers for living in order to prepare yourself for the five powers for dying, which we know is going to come, and we want to be ready for, because, as we said in the beginning, it matters how you act. It does matter how you act. If you just wing it, well, that's not really a good plan. It's better to be prepared, because, according to the teachings, a lot of people don't really understand what's going to happen when you go through the process of dying and you go into the intermediate state, which most people go into, most beings go into, which then will have a major impact on what your future, your next rebirth is going to be. So if you play your cards right, practicing now and being ready and practicing at the time, then you can be rest assured that you'll have a good rebirth. If you just wing it, you take your chances. it matters how you act, and we can start now to preparing for the moment of death. Now, when we say the moment of death, obviously we're not talking about sudden death in an accident or something. We're talking about if a person gets to the point where they're at the end of their life and say they're in palliative care, or they know they have a terminal disease, or it's looking like the end, then you can start switching over into the five powers for dying, because you know, okay, time's up, game's over, here we go. You will have a peaceful death. Not everybody has a peaceful death. The great contemporary teacher, Dzongtsar Kenzi Rinpoche, says, and I quote him now, he says, "The vast majority of pain suffered at the time of death is caused by emotional attachment to life, possessions, friends, family, property, and fretting over unfinished business." You may or may not have physical pain, but a lot of people go through a lot of mental, emotional pain from the attachment. If they haven't let go in advance of that moment, then they have to deal with it then, which is not a good time. And also, sometimes people are in a lot of pain when they're in the process of dying, so then you have that to deal with too. So you have the physical pain, you have the emotional pain, you have the attachment pain, you have all that stuff. It's better to get working on it now and head it off at the pass so that you have a peaceful death. If you have an agitated death, you run the risk of having an unfavorable rebirth, because that will propel you in a direction. For example, if you're angry when you die, or you're attached when you die, or you're resentful when you die, you have unresolved issues, that's a very powerful, critical turning point moment, and it can have a very dramatic effect on the kind of rebirth you have. So you don't want to do that. You want to have a peaceful death so that then you can go through the process, which we're going to explain in a moment here with the five powers, and that will ensure you to have a good rebirth and a peaceful death, and it's a lot better option, but you have to start preparing now. If you wait till the last minute, it's a lot more of a challenge. So what are the five strengths for dying? Or the five powers, if you prefer. The first one is called the positive seeds. Again, this is Dilgo Khyentse's commentary. Other teachers have other ways of describing it. So what he says is, and again, you're at the moment of your final time on this planet, in this body, in this life, you want to start to make offerings to your teachers and to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. In other words, you want to start giving away stuff with an act of generosity. Remember, generosity is one of the six perfections. Just to expand on that a little bit, might be a good idea to have a will, so that's all taken care of for you. You've decided in a calm moment how you want your possessions to be divided and who they should go to. You don't have to give it all to your teacher and to the three jewels. You can give it to whoever you want, but it would be a good idea to give at least some of it in a spiritual direction. And the rest of it, do what you want. One teacher said, well, give a third of it to your teacher in the three jewels, give a third of it for charity, and then give a third of it so everybody can have a big party when you're gone. I kind of like that idea. But in any case, deal with it. I think that's the main point, is don't leave it to the last minute. You got other things to deal with when you're dying, and that should be done, and it should be done in a positive way. And also, by taking care of that, you avoid the problem of people fighting over your inheritance. Unfortunately, I saw that in my family, so I know that can happen, and it's not very nice. And it would be better to avoid that by dealing with this when you can. So that's the first one, the power of positive seeds. The second one is called aspiration. Before I explain that, I need to give a little bit of background about what the teachers say, the great masters say about what happens when you die and you go into the intermediate state, which is called bardo. Especially here in the West, we don't have a really good tradition that explains all this to us. You know, we have Hollywood movies that show the white light at the end of the tunnel and all that stuff. But according to this teaching, that's really not the way it plays out, generally speaking. The bardo can be a very frightful experience for a number of reasons. One of which is when we die, when we go through the actual physical process of dying and letting go of our body, Western medicine just kind of says, well, your heart stops, your brain stops, you're dead. That's it. Doctor signs the death certificate and it's game over. But in these teachings, it's a little more elaborate, and it's described in such a way that your elements dissolve. So fire, air, water, and so on. They dissolve one by one in the process of dying at the very end. And there's actually 8 stages of that. I won't go into that now. But when you have gone through the first 4 stages, that's what Western medicine would call death, clinical death, or whatever they call it. According to this, there's still 4 more stages, and you're not totally dead yet. Your mind stream hasn't separated from your body. That's one aspect of it. You need to know that. You need to get teachings on what are those stages and how to recognize it so that when you experience it, you can say, oh, I'm in this stage, or I'm in that stage, and this next one is coming, and then when it comes, you're not surprised because you know what to expect. And you don't go into panic and fear. You just die naturally because you have prepared yourself for it. As well, when you actually die and then you're in the intermediate state, which most beings go into, not all, but most go into for varying amount of times, there is another series of experiences that you have when you no longer have a physical body, but you have a bardo body, or an energetic body, or whatever you want to call it. And some of those experiences can be very frightening, like very loud sounds of thunder, being on top of a very, very high precipice and being afraid of falling, or having visions or lights, and all of these things can be very frightening if you're not prepared for it. And if you get scared, then you could make the wrong move or movement in the bardo, and that could lead you to a negative rebirth. So you might follow the wrong light, or you might follow a demon who's appearing as a guide and lead you down the wrong path. And if you're in a confused state in the bardo, that's not so good. We don't want that. We want to have clarity in that state. All of this can be very frightening because you don't know what's happening. All this stuff is going on and you're confused, and it's not a good way to go. Aspiration, the power of aspiration when we're dying, is the aspiration, may I be free from all fear in the bardo. We're planting that seed. And then the second part of that is, and may, in all my future lives, may I be blessed with the practice of bodhicitta, this twofold practice that we've talked about. And then we pray or aspire, may the Buddhas bless me, and may my master who taught me bodhicitta and mind training, may my master bless me. So we aspire to be blessed in our future lives. So we plant that seed with our aspiration. And Dilgo Khyentse says we should pray this way again and again and again, over and over again, depending on how long the death process itself lasts. You should continue to aspire and say that and think that. And then we should feel peaceful and confident that our teacher will take care of us. So we're giving our faith and our trust in the powers and in the guru. And that's one of the reasons that guru yoga is so important in Mahayana. We're basically trusting and putting our reliance on someone who is able to help us actually. And we do that by these aspirations. The next power for dying is revulsion. Now, this is similar to the previous revulsion, which is self-cherishing, ego-clinging is the problem. It brought us all of our sorrows, all of our suffering, all of the pain, every problem, everything that we had to go through. But in this situation, we want to make sure that we apply this to the attachment to our bodies. Because we don't really realize this so much. While we're alive, we are attached to our bodies. We spend a lot of time and money, energy, feeding, clothing, washing, putting on makeup, getting massages for this body. And we are attached to it. And some people, when they get to the final moments of their lives, they experience that attachment to their body. They're like, oh no, I'm not ready to go. I didn't finish my business. I still have to do my taxes or whatever. You know? And that can come up for people. And that in itself can be a suffering at the time of death. So we want to make sure that we have this revulsion thing down well. And that this attachment, this ego clinging or whatever attachment, whatever form the attachment takes, we want to be sure to let it go. That's not where we want to be at. We want to be free from that because you're going to be freed from your body pretty soon. And not only you can't take it with you, it refers to money, it also refers to your body. You can't take it with you. We want to renew our revulsion, I guess you could say. The next power is called the power of resolution. The power of resolution refers to reminding ourselves. Remember, this is a mind training. So we remind ourselves that when we do have to go through the bardo, if we continue to meditate on precious bodhicitta, we are really, in effect, meditating on the real heart of the Buddha and Buddhism and bodhisattvas. That's what it's about. It's about bodhicitta. Yeah. We want to keep that in the forefront of our consciousness. We want to be totally clear on that. We want to be constant. We want to be determined. And that will guard us from the terror of the bardo. If we focus on that and really have that clear and stay with it and are resolved in that, we won't go through these terrible experiences that some beings go through in the bardo, because we will have taken this mind training not only to heart but in practice. We'll be actually doing it, and that's where we need to put our cards, put our faith. That will take us through it. And then the final death power is called the power of familiarization. So you may have noticed that the names and the titles are the same, but the take on it is a little bit different. This is kind of honed in on the death moment itself. So in this case, what we should be doing when we say familiarization, that means we should be constantly mulling over all these techniques that we've been talking about. For example, how do you practice the twofold bodhicitta? We should think about that again and again. Be really familiar with it so it's completely second nature. We're doing it all the time. Go back and review your notes if you need to. What are the two kinds of bodhicitta? What are the two kinds of relative bodhicitta? You want to get totally familiar with it and really keep that fresh and current in your experience. So that's one practice that we should be familiar with. Another one is the practice of what's called exchanging self for other, or exchanging happiness for suffering. Now, we haven't really gone into that here because it's kind of a whole teaching in itself. This is what's commonly known as Tonglen, which translates as taking and giving. And in brief, the practice is I'm going to take on the suffering of all beings, all my mother sentient beings who have been so kind to me, and I'm going to give them all my merit, all my good qualities, all my positive circumstances, and everything. At first glance, some people might think, well, whoa, wait a minute. I don't want to be taking on other people's suffering. I got enough of my own, thank you very much. And this good stuff that I have, I've earned it, and I feel like keeping it. And that's kind of our conventional thinking. This kind of goes back to what we were talking about before, is the Buddhas have altruism and we have self-cherishing. So we have to switch those around. And that's why we call it exchanging self for others. Now this is a, logistically it's a kind of a simple practice, but internally it's quite an advanced practice to actually think about, yeah, my aspiration is to take away all the suffering and to give away all the good stuff. Now, how you actually can do that, there's different ways of doing this practice, but one of the ways of doing it is to visualize all the sufferings of others as black smoke that you're breathing into your left nostril with your inhalation that goes down into your heart, destroys your self-cherishing, and then as you exhale, it goes out your right nostril in the form of white light. That's kind of a very brief description of it. You can do that while you're dying, and you should be practicing it now so that when you are dying, it becomes second nature and you don't have to think about, oh, was it, which was it, black or white or left or right, or just, it just becomes a natural practice that you've done your whole life. It's a very important, serious practice. Should be done really every day because, again, we all know we're going to die and we want to be ready, and this is the way to prepare. So that's another thing that we should become familiar with and practice so that it's really second nature. So that's another one of the practices. Another one is developing compassion towards beings that are hostile. This is the famous turning the other cheek. And this is something that there's plenty of opportunity to practice these days when we're alive. Because hostile and irritable people are everywhere. And not only people, but beings, mosquitoes, gnats, black flies. So there's plenty of opportunity to practice patience. This is one of the perfections. Again, patience is one of the perfections. If you haven't memorized the six perfections, it'd be a good idea to do that. We want to become familiar with developing compassion. By compassion, what do we mean? We mean the desire, the aspiration to take away the suffering of a suffering being. That's what compassion means. The other side of the coin is love, or loving kindness, which means we want the other being to be happy. So on the one hand, we want them not to suffer. On the other hand, we want them to be happy. These are some of the practices that we need to be totally familiar with when we get to our deathbed. And we want to live now in such a way that, as we said, by remembering and practicing these mind trainings constantly, then when we get to the time of death, we can do it naturally and easily because we might be in a situation where we're dealing with a lot of pain. And as we all know, pain can be a pretty big distraction sometimes. If it's big pain, that can be a distraction. So it's really good to have this familiarization in place in case the moment of death is a challenge. You'll at least have these practices down pat and you can do them. And that's your insurance policy for getting a good death, good bardo, and a good rebirth. And if you do that, no problem. You're absolutely guaranteed that it's all going to go well. That's not me saying it. This is the ancient teaching and the commentary by Dhigal Khyentse. To wrap it up, what do you actually do when the actual moment of death comes, when it's like, okay, game over, I know it's coming, you want to be ready for that? What are the specifics of it? If you are in a situation where you are literally on your deathbed, again, we're not talking about sudden death or accidental death, but if you are at that moment, if you do get to that point, what you want to do is to do what the Buddha did when he passed away. Now, the Buddha's not subject to death because he's eliminated all his negative karma. But out of compassion, he showed us how to do it. So we don't say Buddha died because he didn't really die. He passed. When he passed away, what did he do? Well, he rolled over on his right side and he put his right hand under his head and he rested his head on his right hand. You may have seen statues of the Buddha that's usually called the reclining Buddha, where he's lying down. Some people even say the sleeping Buddha. Well, no, he's not sleeping. He's getting ready to show us how to die. And the statues usually aren't actually 100% accurate because they show him kind of propped up on his elbow. But what you really should do is rest your head on your right palm. And there's a reason for this, which I'll get into briefly in a minute. And if you can, you should take your right little finger and block your right nostril so that you're like this. The time to practice that is now. I used to always sleep on my left side, so this was really awkward for me and took me a long time practicing this to kind of get comfortable with it, but do it every night now and it's okay. I'm used to it. So why do we want to do this? Without into a lot of detail about it, basically it has to do with your internal energy system and how it flows and how your mind flows within that energy system. The reason that we lie on our right side is that there's a very important energy vein which is on our right side, and when we lie on our right side, we kind of squish it, we kind of compress it so it doesn't flow so fast and so strongly, and therefore our discursive mind doesn't run so fast and so obtrusively. And that's the reason. It's an aid in slowing down our monkey mind, our discursive mind, because in this moment you really want to be focused. You don't want to be thinking about other stuff that's irrelevant. So by putting our body in this position, it helps our mind be calm. So that's why we do this posture if we can. Okay. If you can, you want to do that. And then you want to meditate on love, which is wishing happiness for all beings who are infinite, and compassion, which we said is the desire to free them from every kind of suffering. So you want to meditate on those two things. And if you have practiced taking and giving, you will then do it. So the breath is your support. What's left of your breath will be virtuous. You will meditate on compassion, which is taking other people's suffering, and love or loving kindness, which is giving them happiness. And that's a practice you can do literally on your deathbed in your last moments that will be super beneficial for you. Again, you visualize all the diseases and evil and negative emotions and obscurations and all the suffering of others. You take that on and you give them all the good, the love, abundance, all those good qualities you give to them. And that's a practice in itself. Then what you can do is you can do the wisdom practice, which is basically reflecting and meditating on the teachings that both samsara and nirvana are illusions. They're like a dream or a rainbow. They appear and they look like they're real, but they're not. Everything is devoid of self-existence. It's our mind's perception is what it is. And it doesn't exist inherently and independently of causes and conditions. And that includes the bardo. So because death and the intermediate state are themselves illusory experiences, there's nothing to be afraid of. Again, this is a meditation that you want to do now in advance, while you can, so that when this moment comes, you can do this meditation, you can be convinced of it, and you won't have any mental grasping towards anything, your body, your family, your money, your death, your bardo, your rebirth, or any of that. It'll all be wisdom for you. And if you do all of these things that we have described, that Dilgo Khenzi, this precious teaching that he has given us, you will absolutely 100% for sure be guaranteed a good death, a good bardo, and a good rebirth. At that point, I think we will stop for today. We will dedicate the merit to the benefit of all beings. And we'll take a pause now, and we'll see if there are any questions. So here we pause.